what happens is that we take money out of this context of being in a box and really look at it that, in fact, we are in relationship with money on this entire spectrum, from the very, very practical to the very spiritual. In fact, it's exactly like the experience of being human, that we are so three-dimensional, we are in these bodies, and yet we can also simultaneously be having this very multidimensional experience. When we free money out of that box, that self-imposed mental box that we have put it in, and say, hey, do you want to come with me on this wild multidimensional journey of what it really means to be a human? There's this whole new relationship that opens up with money when we do that.
Welcome to Feed Your Wild, an immersive journey to help you remember your own medicine and awaken your intuitive healing gifts. I'm Vanessa Rodriguez, and join us for heart-centered, real conversations exploring intuition and spirituality, health and wellness, astrology, herbalism, and nature-based practices that will transform your health and life. Our mission is to inspire, empower you, and help you expand your spiritual and intuitive connection to its fullest expression so that we can build a more beautiful world together. Get ready to feed all parts of your wild self. Welcome back to the Feed Your Wild podcast. I am your intuitive nourishment guide today and every episode, Vanessa Rodriguez. I'm so glad you are here. If you are new, welcome, welcome. We have now 275 episodes you can explore. There is a wealth of information, incredible guests that we've had on. There's also a ton of Akashic Soul Nourishment readings. These are channeled intuitive readings for the collective, as well as new moon and full moon insights. And while they may seem like, oh, well, that was for that particular new moon and doesn't pertain to me now, I find there's always tidbits because there's so much that's shared within each episode. There's always something to take away. And of course, we are talking about themes and cycles, so it might be supportive for you in the future. Today, we are back with Sarah Artemisia. We had Sarah on two podcasts ago. That was episode number 273, Plant Spirits and the Transformation of Consciousness. That was such a beautiful conversation. I highly recommend you tune into that one. But today we're talking about something different. We're talking about money. Oh, yes, this scorpionic Taurian energy here that I am feeling, and Sarah becoming one of my favorite Scorpios now with a ton of Virgo, she ain't scared about talking about money. In fact, Sarah has gone super deep in her own money story and work with money. What if the way you've been relating to money is all wrong? What if money isn't the root of all evil, but instead a tool for healing? We carry so many money stories. I know that has been true in my own life, especially as a healer and an intuitive. There are even deeper layers as it relates to doing this type of work for money. And I see this time and time again. That's why I'm really happy to have had Sarah come back onto the podcast to talk about this. So not only is Sarah a plant spirit wisdom teacher, a flower essence practitioner, an Akashic record reader, and host of the Plant Spirit podcast, she's also a financial coach with a master's degree in organizational financial management, and she's a certified money coach. So we sat down to challenge the traditional narratives around money and explore its transformative potential. We navigated the complexities of late-stage capitalism and its effects on the planet and our perception of wealth. Sarah also challenges us to perceive our relationship with money as a multidimensional relationship, which can be experienced on both practical and spiritual levels. We cover a lot in this conversation, including the importance of understanding your conscious relationship with money and how to shift your mindset to recognize its potential, how money can be seen as a fractal for understanding our entire existence. The link between the nervous system and our money story and experience, this one is huge, you guys. If you're not looking at the nervous system as it pertains to money, you're missing out. And we explore the most common internal narratives we often take on as healers and heart-centered people. From the power of writing your money biography to archetypes of the warrior and magician in helping us to orient to money in an empowered way, this episode isn't just about changing how you see money. It's about exploring its potential as a tool for collective healing. So let's redefine the narrative. Let's reclaim our power and let's heal our relationship with money together. I also want to mention that I was recently featured on Sarah's podcast, the Plant Spirit Podcast, and we got to talk about the intuitive healing path with plants and the Akashic Records. Of course, two of most favorite things. I share a lot as it relates to what I have received from the medicine of wild rose and how plants can help usher us on our soul path. We cover key insights into energetic hygiene practices and the importance of listening to the wisdom of the body so that you can be a vessel for your own medicine. This was one of the most nourishing conversations I've had in a while, and I would be so honored for you to take a listen. You can find Sarah's podcast, the Plant Spirit Podcast, in all places where you might find a podcast. I will make sure to link up my specific episode in the show notes as well. And we would love to hear from you. How are these conversations landing for you? You can reach out to us over on Instagram. I'm at Wildly Rooted. You can find all links in the show notes as always. And I can't wait to hear back your reflections and takeaways. If you are also looking to receive deep and divinely guided intuitive insights, I have a few spots open left for December for Akashic Soul Record readings. These are one-on-one sessions. And if you're feeling called to that type of work, it would be my pleasure, my highest honor to support you in that way. You can go to wildlyrooted.com/Akashic Records or simply click the link in the show notes. All right, with that, let's dive into this juicy episode with Sarah Arnamesia. Welcome back to Feed Your Wild. I am so honored to come into space with Sarah once again. You guys heard her over on our previous podcast, and now we're going to get dirty with money and clean with money and all the things with money. Let's get wild with money, Sarah. So I'm going to read your other bio because in our other podcast episode, we really dove into plant spirit medicine and we planted the seeds at the end of that conversation for this episode because there's so much more to your work that pertains to money that is also very much integrated with a lot of what we touched on before in terms of energetics and relationships and all the things. And our need to really highlight relationship with money as it pertains to healers. So I would love to dive deep with you on this. Sarah Arnamesia is a financial coach, plant spirit wisdom teacher, flower essence practitioner, and host of the Plant Spirit Podcast. She helps wellness professionals and empaths clear their inner blocks, transform their experience with money, and connect more deeply with their inner guidance and earth. Having always felt connected to nature and the sacred foundation of life, Sarah has also experienced a profoundly transformational shift in her relationship with money in this life. Sarah has a master's degree in organizational financial management and is a certified money coach, and she utilizes a conscious ecosystems framework in all of her work. She's seen that when people who are oriented towards helping the world become a better place, get clear and aligned with their money, then money becomes a transformational tool for healing in the world. Sarah, thanks for coming back on. I'm excited for this conversation.
So great to see you as always. And yeah, I'm really excited to take a deep dive into our relationship with money today together.
So I highly recommend everybody listen to the other episode. In the last episode, we touched very little on the money piece at the very end. And I don't know if it was on the actual podcast or afterward, but we started to talk about the similarities of our work and my previous history is working within the financial industry, which I don't talk about on the podcast. And I feel like it really is time to start to flesh out this topic of money as it pertains to the healers, the empaths in the world, the people who are listening to this podcast, because there is so much charged energy around this topic. There are so many wounds around this topic. And I think I agree with you that there is a place for money as a transformational tool for healing specifically in this world. And I think there was a time when just hearing that, I would have cringed, to be totally honest. And so I know I have my journey. You reflected a little bit of your journey. I would love to start there though. And start off with, wait, Sarah does money too? So how did you get on the path of being a money coach and working on relationships with money with healers?
I mean, great question. Thanks so much for asking that. Like all good origin stories begins at the beginning, right? So yeah, my relationship with money, as with all of us, began when I was a child. And so if we think about the subconscious patterns that we have in life, the functional, the dysfunctional ones, just all the subconscious patterns that we have in life that we then play out as we grow up, often those are set by the time we're about age 4. And that often comes from witnessing our parents in their experience with life. And money is no different. Money is exactly the same in this. So for me in my journey, I was raised, and if you listen to the last episode, you may recall this, that I was raised by hippie parents. And so the narratives that I grew up with around money were pretty classic ones of money is the root of all evil. You can either be living in your heart and be broke in this life, which is preferable, or you can work a soul-sucking job in a corporation and just be completely disconnected from who you are. And so growing up a sensitive, intuitive, heart-centered person, I always just figured, well, my path is cut out for me. I already know I'm going to take the heart-centered route, right? So knowing that about myself from a very young age, I then, as we all do, until we take a step back and look at our conscious relationship with money, was perpetuating my parents' narratives around it. And I'd invite you all actually who are listening to also do this in this moment of really just taking a step back and think about a belief that you have with money. And then take an additional step back and ask this question of, okay, is that actually true? Or is that just a story that I'm living out as if it were true? And so inevitably in the journey with money, once we take that conscious step to having a clear relationship with it, there's often this pivotal moment of shifting or threshold moment. And so that moment came for me. So my husband and I, we had a VW bus. We were wilderness therapy guides at the time. We were driving to Baja for yoga teacher training and go hang out with my brother who was working down there teaching science to middle schoolers. And on one of those trips, our VW bus broke down 3 times on that trip. And coming back up, crossing the border over in Arizona, we rolled into this gas station and I had an emotional breakdown too, because in that moment, I was feeling so confused, lost, wondering, am I just destined to be broke for the rest of my life? Is this just my destiny carved out for me here? And then I started recognizing that I was living my parents' patterns from that. So a couple things came evolved out of that, a few things actually. One is that I realized that I was living this narrative from my parents as if it was true, but I didn't actually understand any other way to be So there was this whole curiosity that blossomed of, is it possible to even have another way of orienting to money that is grounded in being in the heart and connected to my soul? Because that's foundational for me in all of my work, no matter what, that needs to be there. And so there was this curiosity of, okay, is it possible to even have a heart-centered relationship with money? Is that even possible? Let's find out. So then the other aspect, which this will probably come as no surprise to you, Vanessa, just knowing me, but that I then went to the library, took 12 books out on personal finance and just read through them all because I was like, I need to understand what even is this thing of money. I then went to grad school to get a degree in organizational financial management and then did 2 money coaching certifications to really just dive into, both from a practical and from a behavioral money relationship standpoint, to really dive into this question deeply of how could it be possible to have a good, clear, open, balanced relationship with money? And so that has led me to work with people who are very heart-centered healers, people who are oriented to healing, wellness professionals, empaths, things like this, who want to also shift their relationship with money. And there's 2 layers to that. One is from the personal standpoint of recognizing that a lot of us are here right now. I'd imagine a lot, if not every single person who listens to your podcast is here alive on the planet at this time for a very special reason. And a huge part of that is really to fully what I call, and I think I may have mentioned this last time as well, but to really what I call step into the cosmic soul self, just fully, to fully embody into who you are fully. And there are different things that can take us out of a state of alignment from that. One of those is, of course, trauma. And another, which is very connected to that, is our experience and relationship with money. And those 2 are often very interwoven. So from a personal standpoint in working with people, my goal is to help people clear out those blocks so that they can fully step into the embodiment of who they actually are on the core level. And a lot of times, for example, I worked with one woman who's a manager of an incredibly successful wellness studio. She had been in recovery for 10 years, had a very grounded mindfulness practice, really knew who she was on the core level. But anytime she thought about money, she would either burst into tears or just try to avoid it at all costs because it was kind of this untouchable topic. And so if that is the case where the whole life feels balanced except for money, there's this dip happening. And so part of what I do in my own, what I have done in my own journey with money and what I do with folks with money is help them to really heal that disconnect so that we are functioning in the world as a whole being, as a whole human. And oftentimes the relationship with money can be a huge sticking point with that. So that's the personal layer. And then on the much more meta layer, the reason that I like to work with the folks that I work with specifically is because if you think about your life and how in general, it's highly likely if you're listening to this podcast, that you are someone who is oriented to healing in your life. That it's likely that the types of people that you hang out with, the things that you're interested in, the way that you contribute to the world is to support healing. And that may be through your actual physical profession, or it may just be how you are. Maybe you're just radiating that out in your being, right? And so if we bring money into alignment with that, then money can become a transformational tool for healing. And so that's my big mission with money, is really recognizing that this is a huge element that determines how things are structured in our society. What if we harness that and bring that into alignment with the flow of healing? Then we can utilize it as a tool for transformational healing. And so those are really the 2 huge layers of how I orient and work with money. And it is life-changing. It's absolutely life-changing. And so I think on a personal standpoint, that's really why I do it, because my entire life has completely changed since really getting clear and aligned in my relationship with money.
Well, first of all, I love how you're like, you know, I think I need to get a handle on this money thing. I'm going to get my master's. I'm going to do a million different certifications. I'm going to like go deep into the dark depths of my wounds with the money. And then I think I'll get it. I love that. And very, very little I know about you that has been something that's been reflected is that you're not afraid to go deep. So I love that about you. And of course, you're going to teach us everything that you know and that you've learned in this 1-hour podcast episode, right? But one of the things, well, there's so much in what you just shared. I think where I would like to start is you had mentioned and in your bio and kind of like as a through line from our last conversation, conscious ecosystems framework. You use that term. And I'm curious what that looks like when it comes to money. Because I think, well, that is absolutely a through line within your work, but I think it'll help myself and others to relate to money in a more expanded way, right? Like with this, because just looking at ecosystems. And that's also something that a lot of people I feel deeply connected to anyway, is like, you know, the earth is sort of like animistic type of relationship, understanding seasons and ecosystems, ecology, all of that. So what does that mean when it comes to money?
Yeah, this is a great question. And essentially, it comes down to models of wholeness. And so if you think about what is the greatest model for wholeness in your life, could be anything. For me, it's nature. For me, the greatest model of wholeness that I know is nature. And when I look at nature, and this has been so instrumental in my own work, in healing my relationship with money and in working with folks as well, whether people are oriented to nature or not, I bring this in, either it's in the foreground or it's in the background, informing my entire framework and way that I'm orienting to money, is to really look at if your life was an ecosystem. You could think about if you're running a business or just your entire life, the way that you're orienting to being alive. How does money flow and function through that system? Does it flow through that system like water, like nitrogen, like hydrogen? Or are you treating it at, or is it more like if it was water, you know, you've got a big dam up kind of a thing on off to the side, and money as you're treating it as if it was separate from that ecosystem, or it's just this thing over here that I have to deal with sometimes, and I really don't ever want to deal with it kind of a thing. So in the ecosystems framework is we are acknowledging that whether we like it or not, money is a part of the world that we live in. And so how can we bring it into the whole flow of our entire life so that it does function more like water in the ecosystem, where it's nourishing every aspect? There's a very reciprocal relationship. It's circular, it's cyclical. And this takes it out of that framework, which I think is really damaging, of here we are in the late stages of, I mean, what some people would probably call the death gasps of late stage capitalism, and that our society is functioning with money as if we're on this exponential growth curve. And so if you just think about the shape of an exponential growth curve, it's not sustainable. It's nature doesn't function like that. And so for me, in all of my life, no matter what area I'm looking at, this question of if I'm at a choice point or asking my inner self, how do I move forward in a certain area? I can just pose this question of how would nature do it? And that answers the question. And this could be for very complicated things. This could be for really simple things. And it can be so helpful with money. And for folks listening, if nature is not the thing for you that is your biggest model of wholeness in your life, I would just invite you to ask yourself, what is the biggest model of wholeness in my life that I know? And then just apply anything that I'm talking about in nature, just apply that to your framework of what that is for you, because that will be really helpful for understanding what I'm talking about. So yeah, essentially that really is what it comes down to, is looking at recognizing that money is a part of the flow of life, and how do we bring it in so that it is honoring these natural cycles, these natural ways of being. It can really help us to orient to it in a much more healthy way rather than through this very disordered, dysfunctional way that so much of our society orients to money, which is through this exponential growth model that is harmful to the planet, it's harmful to people. And the thing that comes up around money for that is that people then project that dysfunctionality onto money rather than recognizing, okay, what is money actually at its core essence? Money is not the dysfunctional thing. Giant multinational corporations have exploited money in the same way that they have exploited the earth and people, but that doesn't mean money is bad, just like in the same way that the earth and people are not bad. And so if we understand that, then we can start to have a much more healthy relationship with money. As with all inner work, we start to peel back the layers of trauma, of dysfunction that have been certainly going through our society for at least the last couple thousand years, and really look at, okay, what is this thing on the core level, and how do I have a good relationship with it? And working through that framework of how would this operate if it was operating in a way that worked within a model of wholeness, how would this be operating functionally, that can then help us start to shift and reframe and guide our decisions and actions with it for next steps.
This is so powerful. Of course, divine timing with everything, everything's perfect. But I honestly feel like if I would have had this sort of framework or invitation into understanding money in this way when I was younger, then a lot of the hardships that I experienced because of my beliefs on money, not because of like actual context, the context was created because of my beliefs, I would have had a very different experience. And I think that, of course, there's always still more there, like for each individual, as with anything, like it's a relationship, right? Another thing that came up as you were talking about this and wholeness and also like ecosystem, it makes me think about relationships and agreements. And I was just telling you how I just got off another interview. I was being interviewed, but the conversation that we were having was around people pleasing and so much about relationships and agreements. And I mean, the money system, the capitalistic system is based on agreements, right? We agree that a dollar has a particular value and that when you exchange it, there's going to be some sort of exchanging of service or goods or whatever for that. And even the agreement on the actual value of the dollar, especially now as we see, and I don't want to go like too deep into the weeds, but where we don't have the gold standard, right, for like the US dollar, there's digital currency that's coming online. Like so many places are cashless now, like they do not take cash. So it's interesting as we step even more into like this etherization of money, that it's making even more clear that really it's all about agreements. So that's the agreement sort of like in a more global or like collective stage. But then there's the relational aspect that you were speaking into that's personal, it's deeply personal and also generational, right? Like just like we do with our relationships, who we partner with, like our relationships with our friends or community is very much informed by our familial line and how we were programmed as we were young. And so it's really fascinating to see it in that way. And it makes me even think about money as a victim itself, which is interesting because then that's kind of personifying. I'm like sort of projecting a personification onto money. But if I'm having a relationship with it, I almost have to go through this process of like, damn, like money really got used and abused. And so rather than blaming money, as you were saying, looking at the larger context and the story, and how can we begin to relate with money with a healthy relationship and through that model of wholeness? So I don't know if there's things there that you want to speak into. Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much there. So much of what you just shared. The whole experience of our relationship with money, having clear agreements as we're experiencing what you call this etherization of money, which is fascinating as we're stepping into this age of Aquarius to just witness, okay, how is our experience of the structure of money shifting as we move into this transition globally, that it really brings into question this experience of having a clear agreement with the energy of money. That what does it mean to have clear agreements in all areas of our life, all relationships with people, with nature, with the earth, with our communities, with money? What does it mean to actually have a clear relationship and have clear agreements in our relationship with all of these elements? And it brings to mind this interesting societal projection that I've seen, how people will treat money as if it's just practical. And so if you think about, and many of you may be familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but if you're not familiar with it, essentially it's a triangle or a pyramid where the bottom or the base of it is our physiological needs. And then we have safety, love and belonging, esteem, and then self-actualization. And so our whole society is oriented as if money is just on that physiological, it's about just having a roof over your head and food to eat kind of thing. And yet what I have experienced personally and in folks that I work with is that money is actually with us on every single step of that hierarchy of needs, from the physiological level all the way up to self-actualization. And so when we recognize that, what happens is that we take money out of this context of being in a box and really look at it, that in fact, we are in relationship with money on this entire spectrum, from the very, very practical to the very etheric, to the very spiritual. In fact, it's exactly like the experience of being human, that we are so three-dimensional, we are in these bodies, and yet we can also simultaneously be having this very multidimensional experience. And so when we free money out of that box, that's that, you know, self-imposed mental box that we have put it in, and say, hey, do you want to come with me on this wild multidimensional journey of what it really means to be a human? There's this whole new relationship that opens up with money when we do that. And one of the very practical ways that we can look at how to start engaging that is that you could think about in your life, there's probably things that you're working on, things that you want to heal. Maybe you know what they all are, maybe you don't. But if you want to start to free money of its constraints in your life, it could be helpful to just look at what your practical experience with money is. And when we do that, we start to see what our limitations with money are. We can basically utilize that as a microscope or a funnel to really understand what needs healed in our entire life. And so this is why one of the many reasons that I love working with money as a modality, because it's a fractal. Our experience and relationship with money is a fractal for understanding our entire existence, that we don't have to just treat it as this plastic or dollar bill or, you know, the cryptocurrency or whatever, that it's so much bigger than that. It's so much more than that. And how much more dynamic and engaged and embodied our experience of actually being alive can be when we really bring money into alignment with all aspects, all realms of our life. And another way, another framework that can also be really helpful potentially to really grounding in, what am I even talking about, this experience of, okay, money is so etheric, what does that even mean? You could really think of it as, and you were kind of speaking to this a little bit ago as well, where if you just pose this question of, if money was a person in your life, how would you be oriented to that person? And oftentimes when I first start working with people, I'll ask this in our first call, you know, if money was a person in your life, how would you be orienting to that person? And very often they'll say it's kind of like a booty call, you know, where I just sort of dip in when I want something and then we're not really connected the rest of the week. Totally. Kind of a thing. So, and there may be, there's many, many other ways that you can also be oriented to money. That tends to be a common one, but other ways, other, which also brings up the archetype. So I'd love to talk about that in a little bit too, but other ways that people can be oriented to money could be, say, for example, a micromanager. If you're someone who just feels the need to hoard or save and kind of fearful of letting go, in all of our work with money, the goal is to get to the point where money is a long-term friend, where you're there for each other when you need it the most. You're there in the good times, the hard times. You know, if you need to come over, just have a cup of tea or a nice glass of wine or herbal cordial or something, and just have the deep, long conversations, and you're really there for each other through all of it, through the whole experience of life, you know, when you really, really need it. So that can be really helpful. Another thing that can be really helpful is in terms of really integrating the experience with money into the lived experience, particularly if you're someone who already is oriented to healing, it's highly likely that you have a mindfulness practice that works really well for you. And if you don't, you could just think about breathing as a mindfulness practice. And so if there's something coming up, say, for example, probably sometime later today, after you're listening to this, you'll have something come up where you're engaging with money on some level. Maybe you're buying something online or paying a bill. If you just take a step back and say, okay, I'm going to try this playful experiment. Let's try this playful experiment. And the playful experiment is to first do, could be 10 minutes, could be 1 minute, could be even 30 seconds of whatever mindfulness practice works for you. That could be yoga. It could be meditation. It could be Reiki. Or if you don't have one, you could just take 3 deep breaths and then do your thing with money. That to really experiment with this playful experience of just trying for once to see your experience with money as an extension of your mindfulness practice, that what would it feel like if the next time you're paying your bill, it's the same exact experience in the body as doing a yoga asana, for example, where you're breathing really deeply, you know, you're feeling all the energetic flows, you know, as you're doing your warrior two or whatever your yoga pose is, you know, that you're doing, that this can help to really ground in the experience of shifting the relationship with money, is to really weave it into the mindfulness practices that already work for you, to start bringing it into an experience of allyship in your life.
Hey there, I'm interrupting this lovely conversation to bring you a special invitation. If you are a clinician, a practitioner, a healing artist of any level, maybe you're just starting out, or perhaps you're a seasoned practitioner, if you feel that your soul is aching for a change, that something is calling you, you want to go deeper with your medicine, you want to know and expand your intuitive gifts, you know that your calling is to be an intuitive holistic healer, but you're not sure what that means or looks like. Well, I have a special private training where you will learn my 3-part intuitive healing matrix. This is the foundational piece for all holistic healing practices. And it's what has guided my work and so many others. This private training is called How to Create a Transformative Intuitive Healing Practice You Love. And you can get access to this training for free when you apply and are accepted to the Wildly Intuitive Practitioner Pathway, aka WIP. This is our high-touch, 9-month intuitive healing mentorship and practitioner mastermind. On this journey inside of WIP, you'll be initiated into the Akashic Records, becoming a reader and a practitioner for intuitive connection, experiencing deep self-healing and unparalleled support for your clients and patients. You'll discover your intuitive gifts and break through blocks, limiting beliefs, fears, and programmings that are holding you back. You'll also channel an integrated body of work that synthesizes your innate gifts, experience, and wisdom. The Wildly Intuitive Practitioner Pathway is an initiation. It's your chariot that will carry you into your next level of healing, both personally and in your work. So I invite you to learn more and apply. You can go to wildlyrooted.com/apply. There are no risks or obligations to join after you apply. And if you're accepted, you'll get that private training on how to create a transformative intuitive healing practice you love. Head over to wildlyrooted.com/apply.
So this is so beautiful. It also intertwines with a conversation I was having with somebody who she also, her work focuses on money, but her orientation is through the nervous system. And she's also into like somatic therapy and experiencing. So the way that she relates to money and teaching money is through the lens of the nervous system. And weaves so perfectly with this mindfulness practice and this relational reorienting of connecting, communing with money. And it sounds like the way that you're speaking into is like training ourselves and training our nervous system to not just feel calm around money, but to feel regulated, like to feel connected and regulated, which is not the case for most people, I feel like, in a lot of situations. And there's a lot of disassociation with money. There's a lot of avoidance with money. There's a lot of escapism. There's a lot of blame. Like there's so much there that if those beautiful tools and offerings that you just gave us, I think even those are life-changing if we actually implement them into our lives. So I just want to put a pin on all of that because I think honestly, I don't recommend you walk away from the rest of this podcast episode because it's really juicy. And there's so much more. But if you had to stop listening, like you have these beautiful tools right now. And I encourage you to maybe take some notes on this and begin to implement it because I'm already feeling this shift happening. Even just thinking about later on when I'm having to look at my budget, my accountant just sent me an email like, this is the review of the past month and like the year. And I felt like, you know, like seeing that email, my heart starts to. And so in that moment, like you're saying, how can I make that a time where I'm connecting, tuning in to myself, regulating myself, bringing in that mindfulness, and then opening up the email and continuing that practice with that. That's so profound. I want to get into the biggest blocks that you see, because I want to definitely get into like the archetypes and how you work with a client, like what that actually looks like when you're working through these things. But I'd love to maybe highlight the one or two biggest blocks that you see specifically for the populations that we're speaking into. So the healing practitioners, the empaths, the change makers, the creatives. What are we working with here?
Yeah, well, a lot. These are great, great questions. The things immediately coming to mind are these internal narratives that so often as healers, as heart-centered people, that we may have internalized. Well, actually a few. So there's a couple that we've internalized that are big. One of them is this belief of I'm not good enough, or I'll never be good enough with money. This belief that can be self-perpetuating. The other is this tendency to avoid, to be really avoidant towards money, or be like an ostrich, kind of stick your head in the sand sort of experience. That can be really big. And that often comes from exactly what you were just speaking to, of this heart palpitation, kind of this anxiety. It really is connected with the nervous system experience, which is why that whole process of doing the mindfulness practice first, it's really regulating the nervous system. That's really what that's doing. And then saying, okay, from a space of having a regulated nervous system, how does my experience with money change if I approach just one experience with money from a space of calm and a regulated nervous system? That is exactly what that's doing. And so in the experience of avoidance, what can often happen is that there will be this anxiety simmering on the back burner. Looking at the budget is such a great example for this, because so often people that I work with will just put off even opening up the bank account to just seeing, okay, how much do I even actually owe on this credit card? Just taking a look in the objective mirror of reality. Okay, so this happens. And there's actually a client I've been working with for about 3 years. And it's so interesting to see these patterns that come up. And so this is a very classic one. For example, something will come up with money. And this is someone who's a therapist. You know, she's very in tune with her inner experience and being grounded in that, and helps people in that actually. So I, of course, love working with people like that, because there's such a high level of insight and desire to change. And so she'll notice something will come up with money. She'll have this internal freak out about, oh my gosh, the sky's falling. It's going to be terrible. I spent too much this past month. And then I'll ask this question, okay, have you actually looked in the objective mirror of reality to see, okay, what's actually happening with the money? Oftentimes she'll say, no, it's too scary. There's that pattern, that very long entrenched pattern of back burner anxiety that I was talking about. And so then we'll pull up her budget together. We'll look at it. And she'll recognize, oh, I'm actually doing great. I actually made more money than I spent last month, kind of a thing. But that, how interesting that we can often have this pattern where the fear of something is so much greater, it's so much worse than the actual reality of it. And that applies to so much in life. And certainly with money, we see that in such a big way. So that's a huge pattern. That's a huge block that I see with people, is this tendency towards avoidance that comes from an underlying anxiety. And in this work with money, as in my work with everything, so interesting to look at this dynamic interplay between the internal and the external reality and how they reflect and affect each other. And so we can see this in the beliefs with money, even where we look at, okay, what are the internal narratives around the internal blocks around money? And then also, what are these external blocks around, like the beliefs of the external blocks around money? And so a huge one could be, and for those of you listening, I'd be curious if this resonates with you, what are the beliefs that you have around money? And you could even think about, okay, what are the beliefs that you have around people who have a lot of money? You could even just look at it like that. If the whole thing of, well, I don't know what my beliefs are around money, it feels too abstract to anchor into that. But just think about, do you say, for example, one of the common beliefs that I've come across with folks that I work with is that people who have a lot of money have had to exploit or step on other people to get there. So if I have a lot of money, then that must mean that I'm doing something bad. And so the way that I will often see that narrative play out, that belief pattern play out, will be, for example, someone who has a very high paying job, they're very successful in their work, but they have this pattern, this underlying tendency to just get rid of the money as soon as they bring it in. And so then we'll unpack that, really look into that. Okay, what's really going on this deeper level? Oftentimes they'll come to this realization of, oh, I don't want to actually, despite what I may consciously be saying inside, deep inside, I don't actually want to hold on to the money because that means that I will then be like these other people that I have all these judgments about. So that's very natural. It's very, very natural to have that experience with money. But those, I would say, are really the biggest blocks and limiting beliefs. Others that have come up, it's so fast. I love doing the lineage work with money because, as with all ancestral healing work, I mean, we can really see what needs to be healed in the lineage when we look at the patterns with money and how those have been passed down through the lineage. And so some that were just coming up yesterday with the client I was working with was around this depression era hoarding of money, mattress stuffing, not wanting to just like hoard as much as you can, stuff it in the mattress, don't even save it for a rainy day that might never actually come kind of a thing. It's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of what's physically happening with it because you're hoarding the money, but it's not balanced. It's still coming from that scarcity mindset, from that place of fear. And that, talking with her yesterday, we were able to trace directly back to her grandparents in the Depression era. That's where that stemmed from. And so it was just really interesting to look at, okay, well, it's 2023 now. You're living this life now. You're not living the life of your grandparents. And so what does that mean for you now? To really look at, and really it is this process of becoming really present, of really what is the present reality? What is happening in this present moment? I love doing that in all of my work. And it's so amazing to do that with money. To just say, what is presently happening? To really look in the mirror of reality. Ram Dass has that great phrase of polishing the mirror. That's really the whole framework with money of what is the actual experience with money when we really polish the mirror and see what's really going on. A lot of times it's not as bad. A lot of times it's not as bad as we actually have all these fears around.
Like you said, like so many other relationships or situations, like we can expand whatever it is within our mind. And then that's where the patterns of avoidance or whatever it is, you know, our unique coping mechanisms start to kick in. I know that I had avoidance for a very long time. And you were talking about the ancestral lineage and wounds. And absolutely, like when I've looked into even just my mom's side, oh, this goes for both, but really looking at my mom's side, Depression era. So my grandparents being in the Depression era and coming from very modest backgrounds, farm country of Puerto Rico, and both of my grandfather and grandmother immigrating to Chicago. And he built a business from scratch that was thriving. They were able to purchase buildings. He had a few different stores like bodegas and lost it all due to his own money wounds and a lot of mental and spiritual illness that he was dealing with. There's been a lot of trauma and resentment around money loss in my family, abuse around money on that side of the family in particular. Still, I see it to this day with her side of the family. And so I know that I carried a lot of that. It's not as fully expressed, you know, in that shadowy way as it is with some of my other relatives, but we carry these things. And what you're saying, it really requires presence and attention to bring like awareness to that, because so much is being informed by the unseen forces, like so many other things in our lives, of course. But like money is one of those that's, it's literally part of almost every aspect of our life, like you were saying, whether you want to admit that or not. You can be an off-gridder, but in this digital age, like, you still have to have money to make that happen. So it's very interesting, this avoidant thing. Okay, so I know that so many people are like, oh my God, that's me. Oh my God, I've experienced that. Like there's so much there. Where do you start with a client when you're working with them? And you mentioned archetypes, like you kind of seeded that. Where does that fall into the picture here?
Thanks for asking that. And even before diving into that, I want to just say, based from what you were just sharing, that the patterns, our internal patterns with money are with us no matter how much money we're making. We could be super broke. We could be making $800,000 a year. And so that type of pattern of what I was sharing, for example, before of the clients that I work with, where they're making a lot of money, but then they find that they're spending it all, or they really don't even know where it's going, or maybe they have nothing saved up for retirement, even though they are making a lot of money, that is a pattern that they have had throughout their entire experience with money, no matter what's happening on the physical level with it. And just how powerful it really is to start to bring awareness, to take a peek under the hood and really do that shadow work with money of like bringing the shadows forward in a compassionate, safe, loving environment and say, thank you for being here. You served my ancestors. You served my parents. You served me for part of my life. And now it's time to really look at, is this actually really serving anymore? And so in the work with folks, I begin at the beginning, we start with a money biography. So I will ask people to go through every single year, starting with their earliest memory of money, and then every single year moving forward, a memory that they have of money, and even more important than that, how they were feeling about it. Because that starts to really integrate, okay, what was practically happening, but way more important than that, how are you feeling about it? And sometimes people will say, particularly folks that I'm working with who are old, I mean, some of my clients are in their 60s and 70s. And so they will say, well, how could I even remember what was happening when I was 11, so many decades ago? But you could think about, okay, objectively in the world, for example, when I was 11, what objective year was that on the Gregorian calendar? Okay, was there some war going on that year? Did someone get elected? And then maybe you kind of hone in on the family. Okay, what did we do anything for the holidays that year? What grade was I in school? Okay, do I remember anything in school? Maybe was there some kind of dynamic in my classroom between people that may have had anything to do with money? Or maybe you witnessed your parents having an argument about money, or, you know, there's multiple things, multiple ways that it could go. And so what we find when we do the money biography is that these themes, these patterns start to emerge as we look over the, basically look through the rearview mirror of your experience with money and look at the vast landscape that you have already traveled over in your experience with money. We see these different patterns that emerge. And so these patterns that are emerging have informed your belief systems about money, how you're orienting to it today, based on your actual physical experience and what you have internalized subconsciously from your parents and from your family of origin, or other people raised you than your parents, just from the people who raised you, from the most immediate environments that you were in when you were really, really little, that this is often the things that shape our experience with money. But it can be so helpful to look at it from this chronological story, because then these events that maybe felt really disconnected, we start to see that actually they're really similar, that there are these similar themes. And for example, the client I was working with yesterday, she realized there was so much dysfunctionality in the relationships that she's had in her life, multiple different people. She started to see how not only were the themes of the relationships similar, but the themes of the way that money was functioning in those relationships was really similar. And so we can start to see then how it's intimately connected with our relationships with people, which is so foundational to how we orient to our entire lived experience. So the money bio is the first thing, because it's so helpful to really be able to take a clear look in the rearview mirror and just say, okay, judgments aside, we're going to approach this from a place of compassion. What actually has happened in this life that has brought me to this moment, that has shaped me to who I am today? And then from that, then we do the archetypes work. So in the archetypes work, and I love all kinds of any kind of archetypal work, sign me up. I'm so in there. I love archetypal work because it really helps us to understand these different pieces or aspects of ourselves that we can honor. There's that Rumi poem, The Guest House. And if you haven't ever heard this, I'd highly recommend that you look it up. Of really, he's talking about emotions and welcoming in each emotion like a guest, that each emotion that comes in has something to teach us, that none of them are inherently bad. And so with the archetypes with money, it's the same exact thing, where none of them are inherently bad. These dysfunctional behaviors, these dysfunctional beliefs, which can include things, for example, some examples would include, say, the victim, the innocent is the one, the ostrich who sticks their head in the sand, just says, I don't even want to deal with it. I'd rather just mañana, like push it off to tomorrow forever. I don't ever want to look at it, really, kind of a thing. That avoidance pattern with money is the innocent, the martyr. That's a big one. Being overly generous, taking care of other people up to the detriment of your own expense. I'm sure a lot of women can relate to that. And then there are also these archetypes, again, coming back to that, the internal, the external reality, how they affect and reflect each other, that there are also these two archetypes of the magician and the warrior. And before I share those, one thing I want to share that's really important to understand about the archetypes is really recognizing that they are not saying who or what you are. The archetypes are not saying, this is you, this is what you are, this is who you are. No, what the archetypes are doing is they are saying, this is how you are oriented to money in this moment. And that can shift as you consciously develop your relationship with money. You can consciously shift and evolve your archetypes, which is really freeing because it puts you in the place of empowerment in your relationship with money, which is really, really powerful and really important. And I say this from the experience of having lived it, having experienced it, to come into an empowered relationship with money is so powerful. It impacts everything in life. And so with the magician and the warrior, what we're looking at, the magician being the internally enlightened experience with money and the warrior being the externally empowered experience with money. So then what I do with clients is we look at, okay, what are the archetypes that are driving the car of your life essentially with money? And which ones would you like to be in the driver's seat more? And there are different exercises we could do to really look at, okay, how do we bring those, the warrior, the magician, more forward in the experience with money? And then we also look at the money story mirror of recognizing, okay, really helpful in that rear view mirror experience of looking at what were my parents or in the family of origin, the people who raised me, their primary experiences with money, and then turning the lens inward to the self in this moment. What are my tendencies and patterns with money? But then taking that step back and compassionately saying, okay, where did those come from? You know, I think there can be a lot of tendency, especially in the self-help, self-work realm, to do a lot of pointing the finger inward and just saying like, something's wrong, you need to fix it in yourself. But it can be so helpful to look at, okay, well, those things didn't just appear in a vacuum. Nothing that is happening in our reality appeared in a vacuum, nothing. It all came from somewhere. And so if we look at, okay, well, where did that come from? An example coming to mind in this moment is how one of the folks that I was working with, she was pregnant with her first daughter and was recognizing all this, the avoidance, the fear around money. She recognized that her mother, who was a single mom, had all of this dysfunctional patterns of money that she passed on to her. So we then took a deeper dive into that. Okay, well, where did that come from in your mom? And so then we recognized that actually it came from her grandmother. And so we can have start to have more compassion for the human experience with money rather than just judging it, casting it aside, like putting that aspect of ourselves in a dark corner and shaming ourselves, which is the thing that happens so often with money, shame and guilt. When I ask people, because I always ask people at the beginning, what is your current relationship with money? What would you like it to be? And what is the current experience with money? So often people will say that their current experience is connected to shame and guilt. And so when we shame and guilt pieces of ourselves, we ostracize those pieces. And so much of the work with money, with the archetypes, is about integrating the pieces that we have maybe shunned or shamed or put in a dark closet in the back, you know, up on the shelf that we never want to touch or look at again, and just say, no, let's bring that forward and love that part of ourselves and recognize that that is there for a reason. It may be time to heal that as well. So looking at, is now the time for that? Oftentimes the answer to that is yes. So that is what we do with the archetypes. And so that's all the foundational piece. And then the next layer is to really do a very deep dive into the energetic layer and experience with money. And there are several exercises I do with folks around that of really getting to the core understanding of, okay, now we've looked at all the subconscious patterns and the things that brought you to the state of dysfunction. Now let's go deeper into what is the core relationship and experience you have with money underneath all the layers of all the stories, like what's actually really happening on the core level. We do a lot of visioning work around that, which in my experience, visioning work is actually a lot more about deep listening to really what is calling to come forward rather than this very masculine external projection about where I want to go, actually deeply listening to what really is calling to come forward. And then the last layer, last aspect of what we do together in the work with money is on a very physical, practical layer of looking at, okay, what are your financial goals? Are you trying to save up for retirement? Are you starting a healing business? You know, like what is it that you're doing with money right now that you're really wanting to do? And now that we've done all this inner work, the outer work can actually stick. And this definitely comes from my own direct experience with it, that if we just go straight right to the spreadsheets or right to the practical, okay, I'm going to make a plan, I'm going to have my New Year's resolution, I'm going to stick to it, that will probably fall away within a few months because we haven't done the inner work to actually have the lasting change make any kind of difference. So the inner work on the emotional level, the ancestral work, the energetic layer, that is all foundational for then the practical, or maybe it's paying down debt, maybe it's paying off credit cards, establishing a savings plan. This is so dorky, but it's literally one of my favorite things to do in the world is to look at retirement calculators and look at different retirement calculations, compounding interest, and just the retirement planning session is literally 45 minutes long. And it's one of those things. This question I'll ask people so far to date, everyone has said no to this question of, do you know what your retirement number is? Do you know that if you had to stop working tomorrow, how much money you would need in the bank to be able to indefinitely sustain your life financially for the rest of your life? And if you don't like the word retirement, you could just think of it as work optional, where if you didn't want to have to work tomorrow, how much money would you need in the bank to be able to sustain your current lifestyle? Most people don't know what that number is. And there's a really simple calculation we can do to figure that out. So once we have done this inner work of really making it safe and okay to actually look at money and have a good relationship with it, then we can start to look at the physical, practical stuff. And to me, that's some of the juiciest, most fun parts of all, because even though it sounds really dry and totally nerdy, which it is, it's also about recognizing that money is your ally in this life. And when money is your ally in this life, and you think about what really are the goals that you have in this life, whether that is through your professional work or really just like, what are you even really doing here? What is it that you really actually want to do in this life? And is money the thing that is holding you back from doing that? There may be other things that are doing that, but is money one of those things that is holding you back from doing that? If so, let's clear those blocks out, make the practical plan to make that happen for you, and then you can just do it. It's really amazing. It's really, really, really amazing. It has absolutely changed my life, and it is definitely one of the reasons that it's a primary modality that I work with because it is so transformational.
Oh my gosh, there's so much here. One thing that I do want to speak into that I'm really feeling as well. So you highlighted the importance of that deep inner work and relational work when it comes to money. And like, of course, nervous system work is like woven within that. Before getting into more like, we would say, practical application of money, which I'm like, I'm all jazzed about, and I love spreadsheets too. Like, I'm that kind of nerd too. But I feel like, well, what I was experiencing already, what I was hearing and what was conjuring up was how so often, like for business, for example, I'll think, oh, I just need to do this XYZ strategy. I need the strategies. I need to know like the thing. I try to implement it and it's not working for me. And it's not always because it's not the right strategy. It's that I haven't done the deeper work around the thing. And I feel like the same goes with money. The same goes with relationships, like intimate or partner relationships. You can go to a therapist and you have a strategy for like how to communicate, which is, yeah, helpful, like sign me up. But if you're not doing the inner work around the wounds, then you're going to keep coming up against these same issues. And so you can have all those tools and spreadsheets and strategies. But yeah, like you're saying, that deep inner work is really necessary. The other thing that's coming through related to that is within this system, this more patriarchal, we could say toxic capitalistic system, so many people have been disenfranchised, have not received education, don't have the lineage of, oh yeah, of course we're going to invest our money. Like that is a completely foreign concept. And I know it was for me and my lineage of like investing, which is so interesting that it kind of landed in my lap. Like at how old was I? I was like 20 years old, 19, 20 years old, ended up working in a financial office where it was like alternative investments. And it was this whole new world. And all of a sudden I was seeing all these like white older men who were billionaires. Easily, like money lost, money coming in, money lost, money coming in. And it was like this totally different foreign world that I was not used to. That also, I think, contributed to bringing on a little extra money wounding because I saw a lot of toxicity within that environment as well. And me as a female and a Latina, like I felt so out of place there.
So a lot of women, we hear this all the time, that a lot of women are not investing or like understanding vehicles for growing our money, especially populations that have historically just less access in general. So it still applies. Everything that you're saying is like those deep relational patterns, those woundings, the like bringing an eye to all of those pieces that we just touched on is fundamental for everybody that I just mentioned, you know, even more so, I think, so that we can step into an empowered place in relationship with money and then start to learn and apply those practical tools. So I'm really excited and jazzed up about your work and just like anybody who is really excited and interested to dive into this. There's so much more I want to talk about. We didn't even touch on like feminine versus like more masculine yin yang type of energy related. I mean, that's like a whole nother episode, but to honor everybody's, where can people find you to work with you when it comes to money, this money piece?
Yeah. So thanks for asking that. And my website for the financial coaching is financialabundancecoach.com. So that's just financialabundancecoach.com. And you can also just email me at sarah@financialabundancecoach.com as well.
Amazing. Well, Sarah, I know that I just kind of like word vomited in that last part before that. Is there any last thoughts or insights or anything you feel called to share as we sort of close out our circle on money today?
Yeah, it feels really connected with what you were just sharing, actually, how when it comes to the dysfunctionality of money in the world, which is rampant, it's rampant. We see it everywhere. Having a clear relationship with money is a revolutionary act. That this is one of the reasons that, just in the same way that being connected with joy is also a subversive revolutionary act in this time, that having a clear relationship with money is a revolutionary act because we are doing that in the face of all of this conditioning of the patriarchy that we have been seeing and witnessing, all of the dysfunctionality and exploitation and suffering that has been caused as a result of that. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is exactly what you were just touching on, how really doing the inner work with money allows us to come from a space of alignment when we engage with the tools and strategies. And this is the most important thing, because if we are engaging in all these tools and strategies and just kind of throwing spaghetti at the wall, oh, will this thing stick? Is that going to work? It's like, no, we need to be connecting from a space of alignment in our actions, from again, coming to that space of presence in our experience with money, because when that happens, then we are consciously moving forward in the experience with money. And it comes back to that whole thing of working with money and recognizing that money can be a transformational tool for healing in the world. It can be. It can be. I have experienced it. I have worked with people who are now experiencing this as well, that this is one of the most powerful and important things that we can do as we work in actively shifting the paradigm that we are living on this planet. It's one of the most important things that we need to do.
It feels like a reclamation in addition to the revolution that you're talking about, this reclamation and this revolution that money is inviting us into. Reclaim what I believe money was initially meant for, which is for collective healing, which is for supporting and resourcing everybody. So I'm holding that in my prayers and for the collective. And I just want to say, Sarah, it has been such a delight to connect so deeply with you on these topics and to have you shepherd us through these really rocky territories around money. So I highly recommend everybody check out your work. Yeah. And thank you so much for all that you do.
Thank you so much. So great to see you again. And just so appreciate your work in the world as well. It is so powerful, powerfully transformative. So I honor you. Thank you.
Thank you.